The future is a hefty responsibility and not one that we take lightly. But then taking things lightly has never been what Hefty is about. That's why we've created the Hefty Renew program that turns hard to recycle plastics into valuable resources like park benches and building materials. To participate, simply fill up an orange Hefty Renew bag with accepted items, tie it up, and drop it in with your regular recycling. That's it. It's that easy. It's time to rethink recycling with Renew. Particular valued resources may vary by geography. More info available at heftyrenew.com.
You're a podcast listener, and this is a podcast ad. Reach great listeners like yourself with podcast advertising from Lips and Ads. Choose from hundreds of top podcasts offering host endorsements, or run a reproduced ad like this one across thousands of shows to reach your target audience with Lips and Ads. Go to lipsandads.com now. That's LIBSYNADS.com.
Boom. UFC 295 post-fight show brought to you by the Fight Bananas. I'm Jonathan Ramlakhan. We got my man Blake Sheeners. We just saw two epic title fights finished by knockout. We also saw an entire card where the entire pay-per-view was five finishes, three first-round knockouts, two second-round knockouts. It was exciting. We had Tom Aspinall claiming that interim heavyweight championship in the wakes of John Jones having an injury. And then we also had Alex Pereira. Man, stepping up a weight class, more natural, I guess you can say for him, you know, with his kickboxing weight classes. But he was able to withstand some of the devastation from Jiří Procházka. He got taken down in the first round, but in the second round, he landed a beautiful shot. Jiří went for the takedown, some beautiful elbows, actually put Jiří Procházka out. I thought it was an early stoppage until Procházka was like, yeah, I went out, but my body kept fighting. So when you have the guy telling you that it's like he literally was knocked out, then I have no complaints. The man himself was like, yep, I was out cold, but my body kept going. So shout out to Alex Pereira for getting the win. It was an absolutely impressive victory. The leg kicks to slow down the insane movement of Jiří Procházka was the first thing. And then Jiří actually took him down late in the first round, was able to get back up. And it was always this close from being finished, right? With these two guys, when you have something like this, just like the previous fight with Aspinall and his opponent, right? Just takes one punch, and that's what it did. Couple ones put Alex down, and he went for the takedown, and Pereira finished him there. Man, Blake, what were your thoughts on that main event? We have a new light heavyweight champion in town.
Brand new light heavyweight champion, Alex Pereira, taking on Jiří Procházka. And boy, let me tell you, everything about this fight and leading up to it was so intense. The promo videos that they cut for both of these guys, the Jungle Warrior and Alex Pereira, Czechoslovakian samurai that is Jiří Procházka. The whole thing was just a culminating into two dynamic warriors. And then I don't know if you know you did because you watch every second of every fight. Every time, this stare down while Bruce Buffer was introducing both of these fighters was terrifying. Obviously, you have the always stoic Alex Pereira. He looks, I mean, just that cut jaw, the square rectangular face. He was not blinking, was not moving. Jiří Procházka, the Zen warrior, the Sky Master himself. These two guys were deadlocked on each other the entire time. And let me tell you, when Joe Rogan, who I've heard him talk about his greatest stare downs of all time in Mirko Krokop and Wanderlei Silva when they faced off in Pride, I believe, he said this one took the cake in the most terrifying stare down. I haven't even gotten to the fight yet, John. The fight itself, going into it, I mean, you can cut the tension with a knife. You were waiting for one of these guys to make a move. Alex Pereira, I thought, actually came in, did a really good job of – he's got an amazing leg kick and calf kick. And he does not turn his hips when he throws it. So you can't – he doesn't telegraph it. So you don't know what's coming. He was hitting Jiří with these a lot in the first round. Jiří was able to land some good shots on him. And so I actually kind of had Jiří losing the first round only by a smidgen. It could have gone either way. I saw a lot of people say that Jiří won the first round. I thought Pereira did a lot of damage with those legs kick and was just really trying to gauge the distance of what they were doing. Orthodox fighter. He does a lot of different things in his movement. He was trying to feint a lot of the shots just to see what Alex would do. And really what he kept doing was backing up against the or just out of reach. So that was only going to work as long as he had distance. And it looked like Jiří was able to make that work for a while. But all of a sudden, Alex Pereira, when he was lying back into a corner, locked in a cage, there was only one way to go, and that was straight forward. And he was able to catch Jiří Prochazka's with a nasty left upper hook and, or uppercut. And everybody knows that that left hand of Alex Pereira basically has the power of God within it. He was able to catch Jiří under the chin and collapse him. Now, before I get to the rest of it, there was a time earlier in this fight where he got Alex Pereira up against the cage. And it looked like Alex actually had a guillotine in. Jiří did have a hold of his legs, and his hands were locked on the backside of a single leg. But at one point, I'm sitting there, and it looked like Jiri's body did go limp and sink down. So I'm curious if Jiří earlier in the fight actually had kind of a blood choke on his neck, and Pereira was able to kind of submit him only for a brief second, because his body did go limp, and he didn't fall to the ground, but he definitely sank down. He was able to hold onto the leg. So when Alex released, blood flowed back to the head. That's what it looked like to me. I don't know if you saw the same thing. I don't know if it even crossed your mind at the time, but it looked like to me, Jiří might have been out a little bit earlier in this fight. But like he says, even when I am out, my body keeps going, which is a fucking fantastic line, by the way. And he's proven it multiple time again. But no, Alex Pereira later was able to get the left uppercut hook kind of crossover, was able to absolutely stun Jiří. He fell to the ground, tried to get into a single leg, double leg takedown. Then Pereira started raining down the elbows. They weren't hitting at first, but then those last two or three really caught him on the head. I believe at first glance, I believed it was an early stoppage. We saw how fast Jiří Prochazka got back up. He was clearly not okay with the stoppage in his face and in his mannerisms. But when they zoomed in and really slowed everything down, I'm not quite sure Jiří was there. It was his body's reaction. But even when he sunk down for the takedown, he fell back. And when he fell back, I think he might have been truly out. I am totally on board if you would want to make the argument that, hey, Jiří Prochazka was knocked out and Alex Pereira is the true winner of this. And I would not have an argument against you. If you wanted to make the argument that I think that was an early stoppage and I think they should have let it go on longer because it is the light heavyweight title for the world, it is a, you know, two amazing that we would love to see go even longer into the rounds. And we always know how strong of a chin Jiří has and his ability to always come through it. You have an argument there. So I'm not mad at, you know, I'm watching people respond on Twitter. That was an early stoppage. No, that was a great stoppage. That was an early stoppage. And honestly, I don't have an argument for either one of you guys, but I can understand each one of yours.
Yeah. And to your point, the only thing that with the choke, with the guillotine, Jiří was in half guard on the other side. And that's typically a lot safer of a position than being in full guard with the guillotine. So I definitely understand.
Are you talking about when they were up against the fence or when they were on the ground?
On the ground.
I'm talking about when they were up against the fence with each other. There was a time Pereira had him in a choke. And I didn't think anything of it at first because I saw that Jiri's hands were locked. But all of a sudden his body like stops moving and kind of goes limp. But he doesn't unlock his hands. So I was like, I can't quite tell if you're just trying to relax or if you truly, for just a hot second, kind of went limp. And then, again, like a blood choke is very different than a true submission or a true choke where you're actually unconscious. It's one of those things where you can snap back into it just like that. And that's what it looked like to me. Again, we might have to have higher powers talk to us about that. But if you can find that, go back and look at it when he had him up against the fence, because it looked very interesting to me. It just caught my eye.
Yeah, and I mean, it's funny you say that because, I mean, it's not the first time that something like that has happened with Jiří because, I mean, you talk about him versus, it was Dominic Reyes with the upkick that caught him, I believe, uh-huh. that knocked him out, that he even said, hey, it knocked me out, you know? So I wouldn't doubt you in that being out as far as that, but you know, it was a good fight. You know, looking at that, he kind of lifted Alex Pereira, then slammed him on the ground. Just watching the replay as right now. So yeah, it from my pretend, obviously different point of view, but I didn't really see him go out. But we do have a comment, so I definitely want to say that. Jody Schaefer saying early stoppage got her win again. That's something I wanted to say because when Pereira versus Adesanya was happening in New York, no, I don't think it was New York the first fight, but But when that was fight was happening the first time, Goddard stopped it early for Adesanya as well, right? And, you know, that's something that obviously in New York, the athletic commission is a little more strict the way they do things out there. But it was, you know, even though, like you said, Jody, Goddard was due with that stoppage, it's tougher to say that this time around when Jiří admits to going out. But when you have Adesanya saying, hey, you know, I wasn't out at the time or let me get knocked out, right? Because he was winning that fight before. And, you know, that then that happens in the fifth round. But that's actually a good transition there because, you know, I believe that he called out Adesanya after the fight. So, you know, he was still that's still something that we might see. Adesanya responds on Instagram with and knocked out Alex Pereira with Elsa's hair saying, you know, rent free, something like that. So 205 Israel Adesanya versus Alex Pereira. I would have to give a lot more of the advantage to Alex Pereira with this one, right? He doesn't have to go. This is me saying this as an Israel stan, right? This is Alex Pereira is much bigger, right? When it comes to that fight, like Israel is usually the taller fighter. He's usually the bigger fighter size wise. But, you know, you go up in a weight class and you look what Jan Blachowicz did against him previously, just out muscling him. And you'd have to think that maybe things would be a little bit different this time because he wouldn't have the you know, pressure of the belts to go back to 185. So maybe he could put on a little more weight. So, you know, at 205, a true 205 Israel Adesanya, I'm curious to see how it goes. I would still give the advantage to Alex Pereira just because he's not cutting that much weight. He's retaining a lot more of that power. We saw what the leg kicks did to Jiří Prochazka in one round. We've seen it would have done to Israel Adesanya before. So as far as a quick preview for that one, my man, I want you to give me thoughts on potentially the next matchup for Alex Pereira. If it's Israel Adesanya, is it someone else? Who do you think we have coming up next for Alex Pereira?
So a preview fight, by the way, if Izzy did decide to go up to 205, which we've seen him do before, like you mentioned against Jan Blachowicz, the only bad part was Izzy didn't really gain any weight for that fight, which I thought was a little odd. He said he felt comfortable fighting at his own weight. I believe he only got all the way up to 189 or 193, somewhere in between that range. And Jan Blachowicz was 205 at weigh-ins, and he was probably 230 by the, you know, 225, 230 by the time the fight actually happened. I don't think Izzy can gain the amount of weight just based off of his body mass and how he looks. He's very tall, but he is very skinny. Alex Pereira was cutting so much weight, and he was looking very skinny. Now we get to see him at a healthy 205, and he looks even bigger than he already did. I don't think that fight at 205 goes well for Izzy unless Izzy learns how to fight as a heavier fighter and learns to be comfortable with putting on weight, because the more weight, you're going to add more power to your punches. And are you going to be sacrificing speed with that? I do believe Izzy would not sacrifice so much speed with the weight cut. I think he's just – or I'm sorry, with the weight gain. I just think he's mentally uncomfortable with it. I don't think it would actually hurt his physicality. So it would be a huge mental thing for Izzy. I don't think it would be so much of a physical feat. I think that would be the biggest issue. But that being said, I still think Alex Pereira is definitely the more dangerous fighter at 205. So I'm going to have to lean towards Pereira. As far as somebody who I think in the light heavyweight division he'd be next, I'm all for it. Give him Jamal Hill. Jamal Hill had to vacate the title. Obviously, that's why you had this.
Jiří Prochazka, how long does he have on that Achilles injury?
How much longer does he have to recover?
Yeah.
That's a great question. I don't have an update on where he's at right now. He was standing there at the ring. He looked – I mean, he was telling him, come on. So Jamal Hill was in the building tonight. So he looked like he was fine. I have not heard any word from his camp out of recovery. But it's been quite a while because his title's been vacated for a second. So
looking at it, sorry to cut you off there real quick. So looking at it real quick, he was injured July 14th. And, you know, typically for an Achilles, you're looking at about a year. You know, so even if it's a little bit sooner, you know, if you're looking at 10 months, you're looking at like a May potentially, right? So I still think that's a little bit of time out. You know, you'd probably want to see Dana book that title fight before that. You know what I mean?
Well, if that's the case, then, because that's a short timeline, and unless you're Aaron Rodgers, who apparently just can heal your Achilles overnight, that's probably not going to happen. So you're not getting a rematch versus Jiří, most likely. He's probably not going to face Jan Blachowicz again. I mean, you got Ankalaev
now.
Got,
I mean, Alexander. Do you think maybe Ankalaev? You know what I mean? You have Ankalaev in the wake.
I was going to say, I would say either Ankalaev or Krylov, Akic. Those would be the only guys that I would think, but I don't know. I mean, yeah.
It's tough. It's tough. And you know, with this, it's, you know,
didn't
a division
Ankalaev
that.
Just come a loss? I apologize. Didn't Ankalaev just come
I know he had a draw with Jan a couple while back. I'm not sure if he fought after that yet. But, you know, like you said, this division at 205 is, it seems like it's cursed since the leaving of John Jones or even towards some of that career when he's having to vacate the title, right? I mean, you had Jan Błachowicz, you had Jiří Procházka, you had Jan Błachowicz, or Glover Teixeira. Jamal Hill, and now you're with Alex Pereira, right? So it's very a go. You're just handing the belt around at this point, and I'm curious to see, you know, what if there's a guy with much better wrestling at 205 that can really get to Alex, right? Like when you have a guy like a Russian, like Magomed Ankalaev, right, who has the power, definitely can get knocked out. Don't get me wrong, but just has a little bit more of that power when it comes to getting those takedowns finished. I mean, Jiří Procházka has good takedowns and good top pressure, but as far as like the wrestling itself, you know, he's not necessarily the greatest credentialed wrestler, right? He's a great MMA wrestler when it comes to it, but when you have a guy that's just better at using his weight at 205 versus someone that just knows how to, you know, wrestle at 205, it's a little bit different. And you know, that somebody, like I said, Ankalaev would be a little bit interesting. And there's a lot of options where that can go, man, but I do want to get into this co-main event.
Hold on, real quick to answer your question, because we have a very odd thing happening in the light heavyweight division. Jiří Procházka just lost to Pereira. Pereira's on top right now. Magomed Ankalaev actually came off of two back-to-back. He had a draw with Błachowicz back in December of 2022. Then he had a no contest with Johnny Walker back in October. So he has come off of two questionable, you know, kind of no answers, changes to his position. Then obviously you have Alexander Rakic, who just lost to Jan Błachowicz. Then behind him, you have Nikita Krylov, who I believe had come off of a win. He's the only one who come off of a straight win. And then at seven is Johnny Walker, who obviously had a no contest to Magomed Ankalaev. So you have a weird area where, like, I don't know if anybody's really deserving of the title shot outside of Jamal Hill right now. Maybe Nikita Krylov. Maybe you give it to Ankalaev, since technically he did not lose the last two matches. But you do have a very odd situation now within the light heavyweight division.
Yeah, 205 is always odd. But heavyweight is even crazier now, because you have Tom Aspinall with that interim belt. You have John Jones with the actual belt being out with the pec injury. Stipe Miocic is supposed to be laying in the wakes, and now this just makes things a lot more confusing. So let's get to this fight, right? We had, I am blanking on his name, Tom Aspinall getting the victory tonight, and man, it was almost like this guy was bred to be a champion, right? Beating Sergey Pavlovich the way he did, he looked way bigger than Sergey to go into that fight. This was something I didn't expect, man. He looks big. Like, Tom Aspinall is a big heavyweight, even though he doesn't have the girth. He just has the build. He's bigger than Pavlovich, which is not something I expected overall. But, you know, it was a great fight. You know, the two guys, they went at it. Mm-hmm. And, you know, he was able to get a left hook, right uppercut that put him out? Or it was a series of punches.
It was a faint left overhand right. So, yes, it was two overhand rights that put him out.
Gotcha.
Followed up by subsequent hammer fists, of course.
But it was a beautiful finish by Tom Aspinall. He knocked down Pavlovich. He was able to get the win in the second round, I believe, for that one.
First round.
Yeah. Okay. So first round. Yeah. So the fight ended a lot quicker with these.
It was a minute Carters, like,
yeah. So it was an insane fight, in and out, essentially, for this one. And with that, I mean, now we have a new interim champ. And I think more so than the fight itself is the everything that comes with it, as far as now you have, like I said, John Jones in the wakes. Now you have Stipe Miocic. Now, this is a question I think everybody asks. Does Stipe Miocic deserve that next shot? Or do you think it's more so Dana White doing it just to give John Jones the title of the greatest heavyweight of all time after he beats Stipe?
Ooh, that's tough. Obviously, Stipe is one of those guys that I think has so much reverence from the MMA community as well as Dana White, because he's always stepped up and performed. And the only time that he ever really got, I mean, just did not have a good day was against Francis Ngannou. I think the Stipe Miocic versus John Jones fight was so interesting because it was two legends going at it, and Stipe would be the give John a ton of trouble. But now when you interject Tom Aspinall in it, is Stipe still the worthy guy? He is still sitting at number three. Your number two guy, Sergey Pavlovich, just lost to Tom Aspinall, is now the champion. You do have Ciryl Gane sitting at the number one the number one contender right now for the overall, and he just came off of a win off Sergey Spivak. So do you stick with Stipe Miocic? The rankings would say yes. The deservance would say you'd have to go with Ciryl Gane because he's the number one contender right now, and he's coming off of a win. So I would
Ciryl Gane for John Jones wouldn't make sense. You mean Ciryl Gane for Tom Aspinall?
Ciryl Gane for Tom Aspinall, because Ciryl Gane versus John Jones, we already saw how that happened.
Right.
That ain't happening again. So I think you still save the Stipe Miocic John Jones fight. You do Ciryl Gane versus Tom. John Jones Stipe fight. You do Ciryl Gane versus Tom Aspinall. If Tom Aspinall continues, the winner of the Stipe John Jones fight takes on Tom Aspinall.
Yeah. Yeah, I think that would be a good one. I think it's tough to have Tom Aspinall defend an interim title when he's really earned that title shot, right? I feel like once you win that interim title, you know, it's almost like what with Tony Ferguson, right? When he had that interim title for so long, he never really got to challenge for that real title. But,
yeah. You
know, you don't want to put Tom in a position to lose the interim title and lose this, you know, potential title shot for, you know, a Ciryl Gane, John Jones mess up, which we've already seen. Right. I think the better way to go is you have Tom Waite. Right. Unfortunately, it's the fact of the matter. You have Tom Waite. Right. You let John Jones and Stipe Miocic play out, and then you throw Pavlovich versus Ciryl Gane. Right. So they can be the Pavlovich versus Ciryl Gane as the next one, because we've seen Spivak versus Ciryl Gane.
Yeah.
Right. So Ciryl Gane has.
So how does this work then? So Tom remains the interim champion with no defense. So then when Stipe and John Jones happen,
he's the next one up.
So is John then the champion at that time? He can't be because he vacated the belt. So then
if you vacated the belt, this wouldn't have been an interim.
Oh, I'm sorry. You're correct. My bad. I guess I'm just trying to see how all that plays out. I like your timeline, though. I will say that. So you're saying John Jones, wait for Stipe and John to fight. In the meantime, Ciryl Gane versus Sergey Pavlovich. Winner of Jones and Stipe gets who?
Tom Aspinall.
Okay.
And then you also have a number one contender right away.
Gotcha. Okay, perfect. I see what you're saying now. Gotcha.
Yeah. So that way you can have the winner of John Jones. I'm just going to say John Jones. I think he beats Stipe, to be honest. Yeah. I mean, by the time that fight happens, Stipe is going to be 45, you know, and he's, I think, two of his last three fights, he's lost by knockout, right? I mean, he lost to Francis Ngannou, and then before that, he beat DC, and then before that, he lost to DC, right? If I'm served correctly with that one. So, you know, it's definitely you're going to see a way different Stipe Miocic than we're used to seeing, right? Yes. The guy's going to be 45. You know, obviously with Glover Teixeira, him breaking through at 45, it's a little bit different, and he could potentially knock John Jones out, right? Don't get me wrong, the dude has hands, he has takedown defense, right? He's solid when it comes to that thing. But I think the way John Jones is able to, you know, be so cerebral with all of his matchups, he's going to find the hole in Stipe Miocic's game, whether it's the calf kick, whether it's that oblique kick that he likes to use, right? Or just putting the pressure on and taking him down and submitting him like he did with Ciryl Gane, right? There's many avenues for John Jones to get the win. I think for Stipe Miocic, it's going to have to be by knockout, because I don't think that he has the five-round capability to win a decision against John Jones, right? Defend takedowns for five rounds, you know, be defending against all the weapons, because Stipe has great boxing, but his kicks aren't all that, you know? So when you have a guy that's way more diverse when it comes to the clinch game, the takedowns, everything else, I think that's a lot more of a diverse matchup. Now, as far as John Jones versus Tom Aspinall, that's That's a lot harder of a question. And I'm going to throw that one to you because I don't want to deal with that. So, Tom Jones, Tom Aspinall, who to give me a 1 minute preview real quick because I want to get into the rest of this card as well. So, just give me a quick breakdown of that one before we move on.
Real quick breakdown, Tom Aspinall versus John Jones. John Jones, obviously, they're both massive human beings. I believe Tom Aspinall came in at 260 or 261. We'll see where John Jones is at. I don't know if he's quite at 260. The problem is John Jones is an 84-inch reach, which is bigger than Tom Aspinall's for sure. It's actually a little bit more on par with Sergey Spivak's. Now, if Tom Aspinall is able to navigate inside of that, then we have a whole other game because we know that Tom Aspinall's ground game is very good. Again, kind of reminiscent of Frank Mir. He's got a very good jiu-jitsu game. So does John Jones. His wrestling game is also very good. It would be a lot more evenly matched than I think people would think. I still have to give the edge to John Jones because the man's never been defeated inside the octagon, and I just can't. It's hard to go against that man. He seems like a god who just continues to get better. And we thought he would be a little different, carrying around a little heavier weight when he jumped up to heavyweight. No, he dismantled a Ciryl Gane, who everybody was kind of enamored with. Everybody thought it went Francis Ngannou, Ciryl Gane. He came in and made Ciryl Gane look like Swiss light cheese. Work. So yeah, it was light work. So I would have to give the edge to John Jones, but that is a fight that I would love to see play out.
Yeah, that's going to be an exciting one. I think 2024 is looking to be a very exciting year for MMA. Like 2023 was insane. I mean, we had how many head kick knockouts this year? I think it was Leon Edwards this year, right? That was the first one, I think, Leon Edwards. And then we also had Justin Gaethje getting the head kick knockout. I believe there was another one recently.
Well, I mean, if you wanted to count the one tonight, essentially, Benoit Saint-Denis pretty much got a head kick knockout today.
Yeah, it wasn't that's a good flush,
but it was basically, I mean, in game for him.
Yeah, so I mean, I think that's a good transition, man. Let's just knock that one out real quick. Benoit Saint-Denis, Matt Frivola, Steamrolla. They were doing this fight for the veterans. So I think that was a super awesome move for that one. And what a show they put on, right? I mean, Steamrolla came out. You know, this is a guy that I believe was ranked 14th going into the fight. I do believe I saw a number next to his name, which is I could be wrong on that. But essentially, he was going away. He was going from a takedown, he got away from it, and he got hit with, I think, an overhand right. He started going away from it. And as he was going away, almost in Dominic Cruz versus Chito Vera fashion, right? The head kick came perfectly as he was walking away, walked essentially right into the head kick. Benoit Saint-Denis with a beautiful finish in the first round. Exciting fight, man. This was Terry Carter's fighting. We're going to break down some more of these fights, but give us some love on what we saw from Benoit Saint-Denis versus Matt Steamrolla.
Yeah, no, Matt Frivola, Benoit Saint-Denis. I remember the last time we saw Benoit Saint-Denis fight, I said on this show, this guy is going to be an issue. And he only started training MMA in 2017. That's not a very long time. And he's only 27 years old, I believe. So the man is a
special ops warrior.
Yes, he was in the French special ops. And then he said, hey, after I'm done with that, I would love to just come in and keep fighting people for fun and get paid for it. Matt Frivola, he came in with a lot of angst, a lot of guts, a lot of willpower. But man, Benoit is a machine right now. And he honestly deserves a top team fight because the man just looks so good in there. Like you said, he was able to, it was very reminiscent of Holly Holm, Ronda Rousey, when she tried to run away after a skirmish and Holly Holm threw the head kick up and just took him down, or took Rousey down. This was the same thing almost, except it was up against the cage. Benoit Saint-Denis was able to hit Frivola in the head from behind almost with a high head kick. And it was pretty much lights out after that. Yeah, he was able to land some shots. I don't think he really needed any of those. That's why it would have been
super necessary.
Super necessary.
Shout out to the Game Bread FC for the merch.
But no, overall, that fight was awesome. And you know what's even cooler about that fight? These guys had so much respect for each other. And I will say this entire card, all of the fighters had tremendous amount of showmanship and respect for the other fighter, whether in win or defeat. After this
or
fight,
draw.
Or draw. Yeah, we'll get to that. But after this fight, Matt Frivola stood up and saluted Benoit Saint-Denis. in his face. I mean, it was nothing but respect and homage to this fighter. So I thought that was such a fucking cool moment. I was like, dude, you just saluted the guy that knocked you out. Like, that's cool. That's sportsmanship. That is a cold, badass motherfucker moment. And the entire main card was so fun to watch.
Dude, so much fun. And like you said, we're going to get into the draw that was heard around the world because that fight was insane. But somebody who I do want to show a little bit of love to is one of my favorite female mixed martial artists, Jessica Andrade, right? Regardless if she'll take loss after loss against top-tier talent, I don't care, man. This lady has fucking hands. And what she did to Mackenzie Dern was almost disrespectful. Literally, literally disrespectful. I mean, four knockdowns in one fight. It was left hook, right hook, left hook, left hook. And then Keith Peterson was like, I saw enough. Like, he wanted to stop the fight after the second, maybe the third knockdown. He was definitely getting into there. But after the fourth one, he was like, yeah, this is a mismatch. And that's what it was. It was an absolute mismatch. Mackenzie Dern is not on that level. I don't think, unfortunately, she'll ever really be on that level. It just doesn't seem like she has the ability to mix it up as well. I mean, the jiu-jitsu is obviously solid. You know, she has that in the back of her back of her toolbox. But, you know, when you have somebody like Jessica Andrade, who's just a freaking powerhouse, man, and is going to put you on your ass, you know, regardless of what your skill set is, I think it's just always impressive to see Jessica Andrade do what she did. And I know we're going to give away a little bit of our favorite game, which is Guess the Bonus, but she asked for some of that bonus money for some divorce papers that she's going through. She did get that 50K bonus for that divorce. So she's going to be going home a little bit happier, hopefully. A little bit happier, hopefully, on that one. But man, just give me your quick reaction to that fight.
Yeah, no, I mean, I'll tell you what. I give props to Mackenzie Dern for not quitting. Like, she continuously got knocked down. She even shook Jessica Andrade a couple times in this fight. She was able to land a couple.
Yeah,
I mean, she
that's
was
true.
Kind of sporadic the whole. She was kind of sporadic the whole fucking fight. She looked uncomfortable. You could hear DC and Rogan all saying, like, she just doesn't look. Even Dean Thomas was like, she doesn't look comfortable. She looks like she's a nerd. But she's landing some big shots on Jessica Andrade in these weird flurries that she was doing. The only problem was is she was keeping her chin so high anytime they would get into a skirmish. So it is no wonder that she got caught four separate times and put on her ass. I did not like the game plan that much. I thought that she could have probably tried to corner Andrade a little bit more, been a little bit more strategic and not kept her chin high and not tried to get into those skirmishes and feint the strikes and the jabs and get into the ground game. You had single legs, double legs, get onto the ground, work that game. She did not. She was hellbent on striking with Jessica Andrade. Why somebody would do that, I have no fucking idea, John, because clearly it did not work out for her. But you know what? Mackenzie Dern is tough as nails. She'll be back. Is she ever going to be a prolific striker? No. Is she a whiz kid on the ground? Of course she is. I thought she just kind of went with the game plan. Jessica Andrade did exactly what she should have done. And she even said, once I knocked her down and then she tried to pull guard, she's like, no, get back up here. We're still playing. I'm not done playing with my food before I eat it. All right. So, this fight was awesome. That's 1, 2, 3, 4, 5 knockouts on every fight for the main card. You could not have asked for a better main card.
Main card delivered. If you paid for the pay-per-view, which I absolutely did because I pay for everything.
Of course, we pay for it every
time. Of course,
we
are good citizens and good Samaritans, good sir.
Yes, sir.
But good take to you. But as far as the, like you said, the main card absolutely delivered. Even the prelims delivered. I'm going to give a little bit of love to Joshua Van versus Kevin Borchas, which was an absolutely excellent fight. If you haven't got to check that one out, that was a really good fight too, right? I mean, you had that one, Joshua Van with two knockdowns in that fight. Two takedowns in that fight. I'm pretty sure he knocked down Borchas. Or he was stumbled. Both those guys rocked each other.
We had a knockdown.
Yeah, both those guys stumbled each other, but it was just such a good fight from top to finish. But I think one of the best fights that we see tonight was one that ended up in a draw. And usually when you see a draw, you don't see both opponents dancing together in the cage. But it was one of the craziest things I ever saw. I mean, if you haven't saw it, right? Nazim Sadikov versus Vyacheslav Borshev. Absolutely insane fight there, right? First of all, with Sadikov, the knockdown that he was able to get, he landed, I think it was an over, like a right that was like over the top to get him, and then it was a head kick was flush. And when I say flush, and Jake Mendo keying in backstabbage, ground the ground strikes, at least I get Volkanovski get respect when he's dropped. As far as the Jiri versus Alex fight, like I said, I agree with you. I thought the same thing. Jiri Prochazka said he was out. I'm going to go with the man who took the knockout. You know what I mean? So I definitely understand, Jake. Like Jody was saying earlier, Goddard, this is the second fight, in my opinion, that he stopped a little bit early. But when Jiri says, hey, I was out, but my body kept fighting, hey, the man said he was out. Who am I to say, hey, keep fighting? You know what I mean? But as far as Borshev, right, he ate the head kick. And I think this was a mistake on Sadikov's part where he actually went into the guard. And he stayed on top, and you know, there was some opportunity as far as potentially getting some ground and pound and getting him out of there, but that was a 10-8 in the second round. In the first round, it was very clear that Borshev won, and in the third round, you know, after Borshev like got his gears back, he started wailing on Sadikov, like the body shots that he was, you know, giving to him, and he actually stumbled him, you know, through his guard, because Sadikov really kept that tight guard. He stumbled him through his guard a couple times. It ended up being a draw because, like we said, that 10-8 second round, majority draw, because one judge did not give him a 10-8, which was crazy. But too much judging. We'll talk about that later. As far as the fight goes, absolutely incredible fight. Like I said, it ended up being a draw. I would love to see these guys running back.
No, this is a fight that I would love to see again. And you hit it on the head. Borshov, his pressure throughout the entire fight was awesome. He looked so good. And one of the things that I liked that he did so well was that he was relentless. Even when he took that head kick in the second round, fell back almost like – it reminded me of when Johnny Walker kind of did that weird, like, delayed
– versus Jamal Hill, like, boom.
Yes, he just kind of went, oh, and fell back. Or Wendy Williams from her show when she fainted. no, Borshov like fell back, was able to hold on. Sadikov should have told him to get the fuck back up and fight me again because he had already rocked him once. Why go down on the ground? You're going to waste more energy being down there. And it looked like he got tired when he was down there. Maybe he was already tired before that. So he took the opportunity to gain a little bit of snack. And maybe that's what he did. But in my opinion, he chose the wrong game plan. And I feel like this is a common thing we've seen almost all year. People who are dominating on the feet or at least landed a good shot and came in and got a couple openings that they were able to land and then followed their opponent to the ground but did not deliver ground and pound. If you think that that's going to be the case, stand back up. It's okay. It's not illegal. You're allowed to do that. You saw Jessica Andrade do it, which was phenomenal. She was clocking Mackenzie Dern, and she said, bitch, get your ass back. I'm sorry. Now that's not the Mackenzie, but she's like, bitch, get your ass back up here. We're going to go ahead and fight some more. And that's exactly what she did. We don't see that normally. So, and this was one of those rounds that I finished Borshov in the second round. Had he done that, he did not. It ended up Borshov went into the end of the second round. Borshov was able to get back to the stool, get his wits back about him, and really take that third round. Ended up being a draw. I was not disappointed with the draw. I thought, that's pretty much what a draw looks like to me. Both guys were beating the shit out of each other, and it was a back-and-forth battle the whole time. This is a rare opportunity where I'm going to say I was not disappointed with the draw. I would love to see it run back.
Yeah, I think this was perfect. Like, this is one where you're like, okay, a draw makes sense, right? I think even in the third round before the judges, you know, were reading that with, like, a minute to go, I was like, all right, well, it looks like he has the third round. That probably was a 10-8 second. He won the first and the third. This is probably going to be a draw. And I think this was one of those fights where people actually expected it to be a draw, and it was, you know? So we're almost 40 minutes deep. We had some amazing fights here on UFC 295. Guys, if you aren't already, make sure you guys subscribe here to YouTube. Like us on Facebook. Find us on Instagram and Twitter. We've got content pumping out. We were at GameBred FC. Mr. Dave Van Auken and Mandy Levine were killing it on the broadcast. If you guys didn't get to see, they did the pre-fight show. Dave did every one of the post-fight interviews in the cage. So if you guys haven't checked out GameBred FC, Bare Knuckle MMA, make sure you guys go on their YouTube channel. Check that stuff out. They're taking the gloves off, guys. You had guys like Randy Costa, You had guys like Jason Knight. You had Edge, the Vanilla Gorilla, Ed Sherman, who gave me about 15 minutes of his time for an interview afterwards as well, right? Curtis Millender was on the card. You had Big Country, Roy Nelson. It was an absolute banger of a card. Five people left on stretchers. Guys, if you like violence, make sure you check out Game Bread MMA. Absolute banger of a card from top to bottom. But as far as this show goes, we got one more thing to do, my man. It's called Let's Play Guess the Bonus. So we had five performance awards, one fight of the night. A good little meaty pick there.
I love fighters getting paid, man. I love it. I love
fighters getting paid, man. I think this might be a little bit of a hot topic, but I think that performance bonuses should be within the contract of the UFC, right? If a fighter has in his contract an extra $15,000, $20,000 to just go get the finish, you have a win, you have a show, and you have a finish bonus, right? You have all that attached to your contract. It's just going to make the product that much better. Sure, you'll probably be paying out some more on the back end because fighters are going to, you know, get knockouts, get submissions, but isn't that what we want to see as fans, right? We want to see finishes. Exactly. Of course, we want to see wars like we were talking about just now, but we want to see finishes. And I think sometimes fighters, when they're up on the scorecard, right, they'll just play it safe sometimes. But if you have that in the back of your mind, like if I get a finish, that's an extra $20,000, right? Or something like that. One, it'll help fighters get paid more. And then two, you still can have fight of the night bonuses. You still can have performance bonuses. But now fighters are just getting paid more to do what they're supposed to do. And necessarily, it's really finish a fight, right? And that's what we want to see. But that's just a little tidbit outside of that. But like five performance bonuses, one fight of the night. I'd love to hear your opinions on who we think.
All right. So this is going to be a good one. So I'll try to go with the most, like the ones that I think are definitely the giveaways and then the harder ones. I'm going to go ahead and give Tom Aspinall, performance bonus, or, you know, performance bonus, yes. I'm going to go ahead and give one to, I want to say Pereira, but I don't know if, like, they're going to count that as, like, oh, you definitely won that one. Like, so I'm going to give Jessica Andrade a performance bonus. I'm going to give Benoit St. Denis a performance bonus. I'm going to give Diego Lopez a performance bonus. That's four. So then those four, that's all five. So Pereira did get one.
No, I was just counting them out for you. But are correct, man. You are. All five of our performance bonuses came from the main card. Dana said, fuck it. Let's give all these fighters on the main card a performance bonuses because they all got finishes. So the last one, give me the fight of the night.
Fight of the night. Ooh, okay. This is good because just like we just talked about, the draw from Nazim Sadikov and Vyacheslav Borishev, that could be fight of the night. I also think that Joshua Van versus Kevin Borris could be fight of the night. You know, I'm going to have to give it. Will they give bonuses to the main card? Are they going to give somebody not on the main card for the night? I'm going to go ahead and pull the outer left field. I'm going to give it to Joshua Van and Kevin Borges.
Dang, you should have stuck with your gut, bro. It was Sadikov versus Borislav. It was the draw, man. Ended up getting fight of the night, which I think is awesome because probably they didn't get the win bonus, right? I mean, I'm sure Dana probably paid him on the back end, you know, or something. Yeah. But I think that was well deserved for fight of the night.
That was a fight too, which is even better.
Yeah, both guys literally gave it their all, right? I mean, you had one dude just literally eat a head kick, come back, and in the third round somehow put it together to where he was outlanding on the strike count like 40-20, which was absolutely insane. But Sadikov could have finished that fight in the second round, like you said. Even when they got back to the feet, he was still wobbled. But exciting fight. Perfect pick, in my opinion, for fight of the night. It was a three-round war. Like you said, Joshua Van versus Kevin Borges. That could have been fight of the night as well. I think if that was higher up on the card or closer to the main event, you probably would have seen that get at least a performance award or something. But excellent card overall, man. Excellent fight of the night. My brother, we're about 45 minutes deep. Final thoughts?
Final thoughts. UFC 295 in Madison Square Garden, the Mecca. The Mecca of sporting events, okay? Anything that's all ever been great has been played inside Madison Square Garden, fought inside Madison Square Garden. Anybody who's everybody has been to the Mecca of sports, which is the Garden. They did not disappoint. You had Mr. 45 in the Mr. Don J. Trump. That was pretty cool. You had all the stars. You had almost all the fighters. You had Justin Gaethje. You had the comedians. You had Bill Burr in there. You had rock stars. You had Kid Rock in there. Everybody came out to see this fight, and it did not disappoint. It was fantastic, top to bottom. This is a card that has so much rewatchability. If you did not get to see any of the action tonight, please go back, rewatch it, find it online, go to UFC Fight Pass, whatever you need to do, rewatch all of this. And if you just love hearing us talk, then we'll break down everything for you like we just did. And if you're just catching us now live, check us out. We're going to have this all posted. Check us out tomorrow when we post this bad boy. And keep following anything Fight Bananas, because I'll tell you what, we give you nothing but the hard hitting blood, violence, guts, sweat, and tears. Everything you can ask for in the fight game, Fight Bananas brings it to you. My man John Ramakan on this side is absolutely killing it in the game. Maddie on air, she killed it. Dave Van Auken is an absolute whiz guy up there. He's killing it. Everybody out here is chasing their dreams. So I just want to be not only give a huge praise to Fight Bananas, but also give a huge shout out and thank you to Fight Bananas for just allowing us to do what we freaking love, man.
Yeah. No, I was talking to Dave yesterday, just and this is just kind of pulling back the curtains, you know, as someone who's just been a fan of sports for a long time, you know, he's given me more opportunities that I can even imagine. You know what I mean? So if you're a fan of the show, guys, you know, if you watch anything here on Fight Bananas, Dave's the man. You know, Dave's the dude. You know, he busts his ass. He has a bunch of kids, as well as running an entire MMA, MMA news channel feed that we do here at Fight Bananas. So make sure you guys, if you haven't already, shoot Dave a DM. Just say thanks for all the effort. You know what I mean? Because that man puts in work. We appreciate him. You know, between me and Blake, you know, we give him a lot of love. We appreciate him. But make sure you guys and the fans, make sure you guys show him some love too, because that man puts in work and we appreciate it. But as always, guys, we appreciate you for checking out the Fight Bananas post-fight show. And Blake, my man, as always, it's a fucking pleasure, dude.
A pleasure, buddy.
Getting to talk about these fights, man, what a better way to end my day than doing this with you, my man. And talking with all you guys that are watching with us and listening with us as well. So we appreciate you guys. And until the next fight, we'll see you guys. Be safe out there.